Hello and welcome to the West City Church podcast. If you'd like to get to know us more, find us at westcitychurch.com.au. We really hope that you're encouraged by today's message.
Hey everyone. It's been a week, hey? It's been a really big week. You know, the referendum last weekend, that didn't go the way I wanted it to go anyway. The wars, and the bushfires, climate change, you know, it's all really overwhelming at the moment. And that's kind of something I've always struggled with, is the scope of God, like the scale of God. I can kind of get my head around the bigness of God, and even, you know, God creating the universe and that side of things. But I really struggle with how God could care about what's happening in my life and my issues when that's going on, you know? Gaza's happening, so does God care that I lost my job this week, you know? And it got me thinking about this. I work with kids, mainly autistic kids, and we used to do this asshole thing. Sorry, Dot. Sorry, Moira, for saying asshole. We used to do this asshole thing that's called the size of the problem, right? And we would tell autistic kids what they could and couldn't be upset about. So we'd say, you know, you can't be upset about dropping your food. That's not a big problem. But you can be upset about, say, your dog dying, which is problematic, and we don't do that anymore. But that actually got me thinking about a situation that happened to me a few weeks ago. I hit a dog. And anyone that is friends with me knows I'm a dog person. Like, I'm really, really, really a dog person. And it was the worst situation. It was the last day of school before the school holidays. And it was... So, and I didn't see it coming. I didn't even get a chance to stop. Didn't see it. And it was a golden retriever. And it happened, I know, and it happened in front of the whole family who was about to walk to school. And there were two little kids, like maybe like, you know, 6, 8, and they were screaming and shrieking and crying. And the dad was crying, and her name was Daisy. Like, it was like the worst. It was so terrible, and she died pretty much there. And the reason I'm telling you this is that day, I was so upset, I rang Dawn, and I just couldn't pull myself together. I was crying for like all morning, and Dawn gave me some really good advice. She said, just feel your feelings, because I'm a real doer. I like to do lists, and I like to accomplish things, and I like to make amends. So I went straight into, what can I do to make this better? And Dawn said, just feel your feelings. So I did that for the morning, but then I had to go to Karen up because my kid was flying to Italy that night, and she needed some stuff for this school trip she was going on, and I had no choice. And we got to Karen up, and I felt this pull into this gift shop that I'd never been into before. It's like a WA Collective, I think it's called. And I walked in there, and right at the front of the shop, on the front of this whole pile of dog portraits, was a dog portrait, a watercolour, that looked exactly like this dog. And I know kind of golden retrievers look alike, but looked exactly like this dog. And I know this is macabre, but I had a photo of her in my phone, I'd taken a photo. And I thought, oh, wow, okay, maybe I'll buy this. The family, I don't know if that's tacky, but I'll buy this. And then I quickly grabbed a card because my kid was waiting for me, and I took it to the front counter, and the card was $12. And I went, oh, that's an expensive card. And the lady said, oh, it's because it's infused with daisy flowers. And I was like, oh, wow, okay, so it's one of those cards you plant in the ground. And so that was a bit spooky, but I thought, oh yeah, great. I've got something to do. I'm ignoring Dawn's advice. I'll do something. And then Sam's autistic. She can't handle the bright lights in that shop. So she was next door in Dimmicks. So I went to Dimmicks and I'm just standing there. They have one of those big tubs of picture books, like $3 for $10 or whatever. And I'm just like not even, I'm still spun out by the daisy card. I'm not really even looking. And I've got this book in my hand and the Dimmicks lady comes over and she says, that's a beautiful book if you know any kids that have just experienced grief and loss. And I was just like, what? And this book was called The Invisible String and it was about how love never dies even when someone you know passes away or moves away or whatever. And, you know, that might be coincidence. It might not be. But I was really spun out that I felt like God cared about me in that moment. Well, he cared about that family. He cared about their loss and their grief. And I delivered that stuff to them and they sent me a photo of this little shrine they created and the kids in the photo and ready to plant the daisy seeds. And I mean, that made it worse, but... and then the next day I rang Dawn and told her about this and she said, and God also looked after you because God knows that you needed to do something. Like God knows that you needed to enact something. So that's a small story, but I don't think God is a asshole size of the problem God. You know, I don't think God cares if we come to him about something that seems small. I think he cares about the small stuff and the atrocities happening in the world and the big things as well. So all of that to say, I just hope that you can come to the table with whatever's on your heart and your mind and in your life at the moment. It doesn't matter if it's small. It doesn't matter if it's big. It doesn't matter if you have no words. So thanks, everyone.
Good morning, everyone. Oh, I feel like I've been away forever. There's bound to be people here I don't even know. That's kind of what happens. So hello, if I've never met you before, my name's Kelly, and I'm part of the team. I was part of staff up till middle of this year, and now I'm like a ring-in. Am I a ring-in? So it's nice. A part of the furniture, okay. I'm a ring-in part of the furniture. That's a good thing to do. Why don't you just say hello to people around you? It's always a nice thing to do before we get started. Say hello, make sure everyone feels really, really welcome. If you're embarrassed about that, don't worry about it. Okay. So it's always dangerous to let you all say hello. It's always just this beautiful reminder to me when we talk and turn to each other that we're really not just on a bus, you know, let's not look to the left or the right. We really are supposed to be gathering, and the words that I speak, the songs that we sing, they're so irrelevant in one way towards the presence of God in our lives and inside of us. If we don't share that with each other, then what is faith all about? It's not about destination being heaven. It's just not. It's about who we are along the way. It's about the people that we love and truly deeply care for. It's about the time that we just stop and speak to other people and ensure that they know they have great value, great worth. Because God has got his eyes on the sparrow and on the little things that happen in life as much as the big things are happening around the world, and we get to practice that. You know, I've just come back from Africa this time, and I work in international development, so I travel a lot for across the world, and this time I was in East Africa, and I was in Rwanda and Kenya and Malawi. And sometimes I think I get to see people that most people don't even think about in their lives, and they don't think that anyone vaguely cares. In one respect, you get to carry this sense of course we do. The whole world is deeply connected. And we actually do agonise and suffer for people we don't even know, and we can actually do something beautiful in helping their lives. So I feel this incredible sense of privilege that I get to be part of that. And I can assure you, it's absolute wonder. I met women who have been, West City has supported self-help groups for women in Rwanda for the last probably 5 or 6 years. And one of the first groups we ever started was in a little village called Kurumbi in southern Rwanda. And I've known these women for probably about, before we started, so 7, 8 years. And you know, when I go back and I see them and I see where life started from in terms of their economic position, and they're often their family, and then I see them now. It is unbelievable who they are. And I just want to tell you that they always say, oh, well, who is that church? Who is that church who helped start our group? And I always just talk, and you still at that church? And I have to talk through interpreters. And I always talk to them a bit about us. But, you know, what's actually glorious is hearing that even though COVID took away all their savings and finances, because they're women who came from incredible poverty, never being able to afford more than one meal a day, often begging for that meal for their children, couldn't send their children to school, didn't have a home. And I see them today, and even though they lost everything during COVID, they've completely rebuilt. Most of them are actually miles ahead of where they were. Others have just got a little bit ahead of where they were pre-COVID. But you know what? There's an incredible sense of hope and possibility because they know they can do things for themselves now. That's this great thing. I met this one woman who I hadn't met before, and she was just saying to me that when she came to the group, her husband had left her. He'd gone to Angola back in 2012 to visit family who had left when the genocide had happened. But when he left, she was pregnant and she had a toddler. But he never came back. Was actually his exit. So there she was. She says, I was living in a hut, which was just a mud hut, a mud floor, one door in, one door out. She says that because that was really important to her son. And she said the first year she joined one of our self-help groups, we helped teach them how to, you know, look after themselves and build a little tiny micro business. She said the first year I ended up buying land to build a house. She says, the second year, I built that house with more than one room. My son was so happy because he had more than one door to go in and out of. And she said, then the third year, I got the floor concreted and I bought a lounge, which she was still sitting on, very proudly. She said, the fourth year, I rented land that I could start. She was buying and selling from the market. She thought, if I can actually grow, I can actually do a step ahead. So she said, I hired 4 plots. In the valley floor, and I planted. She said, the fifth year, I bought a goat and a cow. This is the sixth year, and she says, I'm actually buying that land. It's just, you hear that in disbelief, how much life has changed for that woman. And she cried when she said, that first year when he left me, she said, I was pregnant and I had a toddler, and I made money by going to the valley floor, filling up containers and taking them to builder sites for 8 cents a trip. I had to do 10 trips a day to survive. And she said, I felt such a failure and I felt so ashamed in front of my parents. And she says, and now my parents call me, my daughter, she's the leader of Niamagabi, which is the whole district. We think that's a bit of a stretch. But what a magnificent story. So I get to hear them all the time. And, you know, I come back and sometimes it feels such a, how is that happening there and how does my world fit here? But I've learnt to realise that every person in this room does matter just as much. as every one of those women and those little children who I adore over there, that life is actually supposed to be full of these complexities in life, and we should not look away from either. We shouldn't look away from difficulties, but we shouldn't look away from beauty. But God's kind of like, all of that is in his hands, isn't it? All of that was in creation. Today I'm talking about leadership and the revolutionary leader of Jesus. You know, how do we lead like him? And I do think leadership is really critical. I actually really do. I do believe that statement from John Maxwell is that everything rises and falls on leadership. Leadership is simply influencing people to go in a direction or for a purpose that you believe in. And it's that capacity to influence. I think it's so critical, whether it's you just leading yourself or your home or on a broader scale. As I said, I was in Rwanda, which is a country I've been to many times. Back in 1994, Rwanda had a genocide. In 100 days, a million people died. 10,000 people a day died in hand-to-hand combat. That country, which is landlocked, was at that time only about 7 million people. 80% relying on agriculture. It was an absolute train wreck of a country. A million people died out of 7 million. 2 million left the country. 3 million were internally displaced. 500,000 women were raped and up and with children. 400,000 men were put into jail because they were just the leaders of it. I mean, it was a country that you kind of looked at and thought, how are they ever going to get out of that? And now Rwanda is absolutely the pearl of Africa. Everyone, every country I go to says if I could move anywhere, I'd move to Rwanda. And, you know, a man and his people, Paul Kagame, rode in at the end of that 100 days and took back the country. He was a revolutionary leader. And ended up becoming the Prime Minister, President of that country. And in 1999, he wrote a document with his team, which was called Rwanda 2020. And in that document, they decided that Rwanda would be based on three things: pro-poor, pro-women, and anti-corruption. And they set up systems. They didn't just talk the talk. They set up systems that were pro-poor, like giving poor access to funds. They set up situations pro-women. They changed the constitution. And they said 30% of every committee, informal and formal, must be composed of women. And people said, but you can't do that in the parliament because there's no women who have got in, they haven't been educated. It's never going to work out. And he said, I know enough women in my life to know that if we give women a chance, they'll take over. And now that parliament is six. Oh, a bit nerve-wracking. But anyway, 62% of that parliament is now women. Highest in the world. And it said we'll become anti-corruption. And Rwanda is known as a country that sometimes is heavy-handed because it's so anti-corruption that you're almost guilty before proven innocent. But I guess they had to swing that direction to oppose the seeds of corruption which have absolutely destroyed so much of Africa. And leadership, not just of a man, but of what he was able to foster, has changed that country. Now it's in the top 15 fastest growing economies in the world. It's less than 30% reliant on aid, which is unbelievable in Africa. You know, leadership is actually really, really important at every level. And I think for that reason, it's become a bit of a buzzword, right? So you think we can go to a leadership conference and, you know, wahoo, we've arrived. But it's really actually, we're always looking for these best practices and tips, you know, and I see this even in church leadership, which has grown astronomically, the concept of church leadership, since the early 1990s. Before that, it was a bit more loose as a goose, but then it became really formal. A lot of that was through the Global Leadership Summit and the work of Bill Hybels. But have we been too quick to adopt processes and tips just because we want the end point of this concept of success? Yeah, do we move too quickly on something we know is a really important concept when in fact a lot of the seeds of what Jesus would say as a revolutionary leader and the kind of what success is all about are really already in Scripture? You know, I went along to a leadership training. I mean, this was probably about 20 years ago. And I'd read the book before I went. And I knew this lead guy was going to be teaching. And I'd actually read this in the opening of this chapter. And it said, the reason you can identify leaders really quickly, one of the best tips is how quickly they order from a menu. This is true. How quickly they order their meal. I thought, oh, gosh, I'm going to be ahead of this game. As soon as we get there, I'll order really quick. I got this nailed. Then this thought came to me. Is this not the most ridiculous thing you've ever heard in your life? How am I going to participate? I am going to be the last person to order. This is ridiculous. He was actually a really great person. I'm not having a go at him. But what it became is we look for these shortcuts. I just do not see Jesus thinking the first person to order was the person who was actually the leader. But, you know, we do take on these leadership ideals really quickly. The most common form of leader in the church is tall, lean, male, angular, dark-haired. Sorry, Phil, you missed out on one. Otherwise, you nailed it. Do you know that? And you're kind of going to yourself, well, Jesus was none of those things. Historically, we would hear. Certainly, Joseph, when he was identified as the leader, the clarity is that all his brothers were all of those things, and yet he was chosen, the ruddy sapling. How do we get confused about that? We look for people who've got a presence, that they're articulate, that they're competent, that they're intelligent. And then we measure success by the outputs and then the achievements. We're all guilty of this, are we not? So sadly, many times Christian leadership looks exactly like corporate leadership. And may I say, we're all still mightily impressed by the size of someone's church, by how they speak, by their standing in the community, and the way they dress. And I don't think Jesus gives a rip about any of it. So what kind of leader do we want to be here? What kind of leader do we want to be in our homes, in our communities, in our workplaces? Well, I think Matthew 20 just says, this is who you're supposed to be. Then the mother of the sons of Zebedee came up to him, Jesus, with her sons, and kneeling before him, she asked him for something. And he said to her, what do you want? And she says, command that these two sons of mine may sit, one at your right hand and one at your left hand in the kingdom. And Jesus answers, you do not know what you're asking. Are you able to drink the cup that I drink? And they said to him, the brothers, oh, we are able. And he said to them, you will drink my cup, but to sit at my right hand and at my left is not mine to grant, but it is for those who have been prepared by my Father. And when the other disciples heard it, they were indignant at the two brothers. But Jesus calls them and he says, you know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great men exercise authority over them. It shall not be so among you. But whoever would be great among you must be your servant, and whoever be first among you must be your slave, even as the Son of Man came not to serve, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. That's the picture of leadership we're called to. That's it. Actually, not that complicated. The leadership is clear. He says it's a gift. It's not a striving. You know, a number of scriptures talk about the fact there's gifts of leadership in the church. There's pastors and, you know, there's teachers. There's administrators. Don't strive. Don't strive. We've all got parts of the body. We're not all called to kind of be the upfront leaders, and we're all made to serve one another. You know, I find it really interesting that the gift of leadership is so obvious, because the person who struns me most with leadership is actually Jesus, don't you think? Because I just think one of the most phenomenal, I'll read it to you, because it just always makes me giggle to think this could happen. As Jesus begins his ministry, so no one really knows too much about him, right? He calls his first disciples, Simon, Andrew, John, and John, to follow him and fish for people. Simon and Andrew, they just leave mending their nets. James and John leave their father and all just follow after Jesus. Like he just says, come, follow me, be fishers of men. I mean, someone said that to you, what would you say? Take a jump, you know, I'm not following. There's obviously something that was within him that just caused those men to say, I'll leave everything for you. You can't work that up. You can't go to a little training schedule and develop your skills, how to be an influential person. Within the kingdom, God gets to call that. But the second thought about it is the whole thing about leadership is it's serving, not lording. It's not lording. I love this concept that people talk about green leaf and servant leadership. Have you heard that one? You've heard it, haven't you? He's big. I'm like, in the church, we'll have a concept of servant leadership. I'm like, well, what other leadership is there? There is no other leadership model for the church. There is no other. If you want to lead, you've got to lose stuff. It's not an easy call to actually say, I actually will serve with everything within me. And you know how you do it? You do it by encouraging other people to be their best. Not by actually even thinking that you're the best. It's about saying, Josh, you're going to be fabulous speaking and encouraging and running, you know, just hosting in church. Let's help. How are we going to help you get better? It's about caring deeply when other people suffer, not thinking, look, I can't hear about this right now because I've just got something very important in my life. It's about, yeah, another night and another day where someone does need to chat to you. And of course you have to take care of yourself. You can't kind of be ruined, but at the same time, it's going to cost you. You can't think if you're going to be a leader that you're going to have this balanced life all the time. You have to have enough balance to actually stay well. But it will cost you. And if you're an aspiring leader, it's not about saying, oh, look, I'm better than them, and why haven't they acknowledged me yet? It's about saying to the person who's actually leading you, I will serve you with everything I've got. I will be loyal. I'll be reliable. You can trust me. It's just such the opposite of what we sometimes see as a leadership model. But I just have to remind you, the revolutionary leader of Christ, there is no other model. I've heard in churches when someone gets up to become the leader, I'm sure you've heard this, they're taking over from someone and they get up and they know, and they almost start going through the weaknesses of the last leader. I can assure you, if you've been hurt before, you're never going to be hurt again. And as they're saying this, I'm like, Jesus would never have done this. You're missing the mark. You don't need to make false promises. You don't need to talk someone else down, because as soon as you talk about their weaknesses, that's exactly what you're doing. You just need to humbly say, you got me. I'm sorry, because you're going to find out something is not great. But you know what? I'm going to serve you. Everything I've got in me. It's a gift, it's not striving, it's serving, not lording, and finally, it's giving, not getting. Oh, I just think it's such a phenomenal idea that when you lead, actually, you're going to have to give. You're not going to get. The end of that scripture does say, even as the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve and to give his life. The one who we follow, the one who we're talking about as a revolutionary leader, gave the life all the way to the cross, carried a cross, was humiliated and abused, was hung up and speared and died a terrible death. I don't know. I don't think I'm aspiring after it in some ways. All of us are on this journey to the cross. whether you're leading or not. We're all leading this idea of, I'm just having to learn how to give my life away. But if you're the leader, you're out in front. You know, I was in Rwanda and I was travelling with a man, a Rwandese man called Famwell, who's a good friend of mine. And when we were travelling in this particular area, I noticed that everyone kept whispering about him, deferring to him. He's not at all, he's just not at all the kind of person who you would, you know, you'd see that in, because he's just quiet and he's just gorgeous and this kind, gentle, beautiful man, right? But I could tell, I was like, Famwell, what is happening? He's like, oh, I used to live around here, don't worry. You know. And I'm thinking, oh, well, you used to live around here. And they just all remember him because he's gone to the big smoke of Kigali and we're out in this little town. Anyway, I got back to Kigali and I spoke to John, who runs the organisation that I work with. And I said, John, what was going on near Mugabe? Because I'm there, I'm with Famwell, and everyone's whispering about him. And I said, I felt the whispering. And then John goes to me, Famwell doesn't want us to talk about it. And he said, I'm going to just tell you this story. You can tell him you know, but please do not talk to him about it. I'm like, okay. So he says, Famwell was 16 years old when the Rwandan genocide broke out. And the all these rebel forces were going through the rural areas and just creating, they were just massacring people. But they were dividing people into Hutu and Tutsi, which was not, they're not two tribes. They're just two social groups that were constructed by the Belgians, right? So let's be clear, they're not different races. They were just all Rwandese, but they were social groups. But you actually identified as a Hutu or Tutsi back then. Now you're not allowed to, it's illegal. So what they would do is go into an area and they'd say, all the Hutus over there, you're not going to get killed, and the Tutsis over here, and we're going to massacre you. So he said, they said they went into his high school. And in his high school, he was the head of the Christian body, Christian Union body. And they took all the students, about 3,000, down onto the oval, and they said, all the Hutus go to one side and all the Tutsis go to the other side. And he knew what the story had been, because this wasn't the first place it was happening. So he said, Famwell stood in the middle and he wouldn't move. And he's a 16-year-old man, young man. And he said, the forces said to him, you have to move, and we know you're Hutu. So get over there. And he said, I won't do it. And they said, well, if you don't do it, we're going to kill you. And he said, well, then you'll have to do it. Because if I do this, what am I saying? What am I actually saying to people who I've told them they could trust me? So they shot him in his leg. And then they said, now move. And he wouldn't move. They shot him in his other leg and he wouldn't move. So they shot him in the head and they rolled him in to a huge ditch with hundreds of other people who had been massacred. And for 3 years, Famwell lay there. And 3 days. 3 years. It's a long journey. But 3 days until they came along and they looked for people who had survived. And Famwell was one. They pulled him out and he had 2 years to just recover enough to walk and talk and regain all these things. And he's got a very unusual shaped head because of this. And Famwell on that day did something that I can't even imagine having the courage to do. I can't even get my head around it, can you? But somehow, in the worst of circumstances, a young man recognised that to find your life, you have to lose it. And that was what he was really prepared to do. And I don't know if I would be. So let me not stand here thinking that. You know, leadership is not simple or easy. And it carries this weight of responsibility that far, far outweighs your authority. Most people just think about the authority and the power. But the responsibility is so much greater. And quickly, or eventually, based on how you outwork your leadership role, you will need to choose to be humble or you will be humbled. You will choose to serve and get your accolades only on earth. You will set yourself up as an authority based on competence and knowledge, or you remain open to learning and growing. You will think you're missing out when you're not recognised. Or you will realise that the only one who matters never takes his eyes off you. You'll see leadership as a pyramid with you standing on the top, or an inverted pyramid, when you carry and serve others with grace and kindness. Because leadership is not measured by what you do, it's measured by what you endure. And the way of leadership will always end up revealing your character. And the wise leader is more worried about who they're becoming and how they're finishing, rather than any achievements along the way. Because leadership is the long journey, and how we end is all that it's about. And may we love people with such a depth along the way that they know he is the only one to follow, the revolutionary leader. I just pray that we at West City are these kind of leaders. In our homes, with our children, in our communities, as we walk this street, may we not walk with proud, arrogant looks. May we greet every person like they matter beyond belief. You know what? I just reckon the revolutionary leader will be well proud of the kind of people we are.
How good was that message? Thank you so much for joining us. Each week at West City, we say a benediction together. We do this because we believe that the purpose of the church is to be a caring community for the world, and that as we go and serve others, we enter into Christ's work of welcome, restoration, and healing, both for us and others. We believe that in doing so, we get to see and encounter Christ. So let's say the benediction together. We come together as the church to be reminded of the go of Christ. So we will go out and feed the hungry, go out and clothe the naked, go out and fight for justice, go out and end oppression, go out and proclaim anew the old, old story, go out and associate with those who don't look like us, think like us, act like us, and don't even like us. And we'll do it all in the name of the one who sent us. His name is Jesus.